Good morning. Welcome to the Bell and Paul Kliegel Show. Brad Pollock and Bob Leonard in the studio to talk to you about any legal topic. You can call us at 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255. If you're in Steamboat Springs, 970-457-1009. If you were listening over the break, they were talking about a show we do on KOA 850 at 10 a.m. today. They need more in depth, and that's why we talk to him later on. We try and help him get started, and at other times we help him go through what's happening in their lives and give them an idea. It's hard sometimes to just get somebody to give you some general advice, and we're here to try and help you out with that. So give us a call. You can call us at 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255. 8255. If you're in Steamboat Springs, call us at 970-457-1009. That's 970-457-1009. But in town, it's 303-713-8255. You know, we have been doing this show for long enough that we know that there's times when people need to call and they need to talk to us. So please feel free to do so. We have five books that we've written about different legal topics, about how to protect your rights, about what you need to do to protect your rights and what you want to do in different situations. You can also call us or write to us and ask for one of those books to see what's going on there and get an idea of what's happening. We want you to be advised. We want you to be educated. We want you to understand what's happening in your legal life. We're not a political show, so... that's something we don't do. Bob, how are you doing today?
Doing great. How are you doing, Brad?
I'm doing good. Bob, in our office, we do a lot of personal injury work. As a matter of fact, that is all we really do is personal injury work. We do this show, talk about any legal topic, but in our office, a lot of personal injury work. But some of that personal injury work, and a lot of it revolves around or includes workers' comp cases. And when we do a workers' comp case, I don't know if the people out there understand or if most people understand that's an injury that is the result of while you're on the job.
Right. You have to be on the job and working the scope of your employment and also working on the job. For example, you can be hurt off the job, not necessarily workers' comp, but let's say the same injury occurs to you while you're on the job and may be covered by workers' comp.
So, statute. So when that's a whole new set of rules. And it's a place where you qualify to get recovery for the injury that you experienced, not because somebody else caused it. In most personal injury law, you qualify to get compensation for your injuries if somebody else acted below the standard of care or if they are negligent or if they caused the injury.
You know, Brad, the reason why we have a workers' comp statute is because some of these longtime administrative law judges will tell you that in the old days, we're talking maybe the turn of the century, you got hurt on the job, you had to prove liability, you had to actually sue your employer. You had to file a case against your employer for liability. So as a compromise, they developed the workers' comp statute. If you get hurt on the job, you do not have to prove any liability against the employer, but you only have one claim, and that claim is against your employer. So in other words, let's say you trip and fall, there's a hole, and you step into a hole and you break your ankle. You don't have to prove, you don't have to prove negligence on the part of your employer, but you have an opportunity to make a claim against your employer under the workers' comp statute, and that's the only claim you have. You can't sue your employer for an on-the-job injury.
So what you're looking at is you're not trying to even show, and you don't care. Nobody cares whether or not there's negligence, except for there can be some reduction in your benefits if you yourself were negligent in causing your own injury, or if you broke a safety rule. I advise all of you, when you're out there working, obey those safety rules. And for construction people, that means if you're supposed to wear a hard hat, wear a hard hat. I don't care if you say, well, gee, I work indoors and inside the houses that are being built, and there's nothing that's really going to fall on my head. Wear a hard hat if you're supposed to be wearing a hard hat. Follow the rules. But the protection you get is if you're hurt on the job, you have protection and you have coverage for roofers. If you're out there roofing and you fall off a roof or you get hurt, you're going to have protection. You're going to have some kind of safety for the people who are doing the hard work out there that are building and constructing our homes and our buildings. For those of you, even if you're driving for your company, if you're on the job inside an office and you get hurt, you have the right to workers' comp, and your employer is required by law to carry workers' comp.
Right. You have to show that the injury was incurred in the course of your employment, and that you have to also show that the injury arose out of your employment. So, in other words, if you walk down the hallway and you trip and you hurt yourself, may not necessarily be workers' comp if you just tripped. If the carpet was torn and you tripped, it's definitely on the job, probably workers' comp. If you just trip and fall down, it may not be workers' comp because it was not necessarily a reason. There was no reason for it. It wasn't part of your job. You just tripped and fell. Sometimes people fall, they call it idiopathic, which means there's no real reason. They don't know why you fell. And work comp will try to exclude that, saying it was not on the job injury.
You want to watch for if you're driving to or from a job location to another job location, or if you're carrying out any kind of transportation, you're in a car crash, you're probably going to be under work comp. You have the right to recover under work comp. That can be if you're in the car crash and you caused it. That can be if you are the responsible party for having caused the crash or having caused your car to go off the road, and you're saying, well, gee, I caused it. I was the one who made the mistake and resulted in the injuries. If you're on the job, there's a good chance you still have work comp coverage.
You know, Brad, you also could be, let's say your boss asked you before, you know, let's say your normal hours are 8 to 5 and you speak with your boss. He says, can you stop off, pick up some donuts for the meeting at, you know, 9 o'clock meeting. The fact that you're doing something for the job could possibly invoke the work comp statute. And you might get the protections if you're doing something for your job.
So you got to pay attention to that. You can call us at 303-713-8255 to talk to us about any legal matter, any legal topic you'd like to talk to us about. 303-713-8255. If you're in Steamboat Springs, call us at 970-457-1009. That's 970-457-1009. We're here to talk to you about what might have occurred to you, or what you may need help in, or what you'd like to know, or what's going on in your life. We're personal injury lawyers in our regular lives and our regular legal lives, but we're here on this show to help you with respect to what injuries you might have, or with respect to what legal matters you might have, what might be happening to you. We're willing to help you out with whatever we can, or help you find other lawyers who will do that. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Brad Pollock and Bob Leonard in the studio to talk to you about any legal topic. You can call us at 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255. If you're in Steamboat Springs, 970-457-1009. If you were listening over the break, they were talking about a show we do on KOA 850 at 10 a.m. today. Listen to it. It gives you an idea what goes on with respect to your medical and mental health records when you're involved in a personal injury case, and when you're having to deal with what kind of information the defense lawyers and what kind of information the insurance companies want from you. And this is important to know and have an idea in advance, because you're not going to get a lot of chances to listen or get an idea what you should tell the adjuster when you're in that first crash and the adjuster from the other side calls up. You want to find out what you really have to tell them. What do you really have to sign? What information do you really have to give them? You know, you can always call the attorney then, but it's always nice to have a little bit of that information in advance. You get in a crash, you're thinking, I'm hurt, I'm going to call the adjuster. Certainly they'll take care of me. Certainly they'll work for me. Certainly they'll be fair. And they start saying they want information from you, and you think, well, that makes sense. Or you're thinking, do I really have to do that? It's nice to have an idea what you do. You have to give them what you don't have to give them. But one thing is for certain is that you don't sign those releases and you don't send them back.
And also, Brad, they're not supposed to even contact you within the first 2 weeks after an accident if you're under the care of a doctor.
Right. They have to give you time to recover from your injuries. There's a lot of excitement that goes on. There's a lot of concerns that go on. You need to make sure that your rights are protected. We have injury packets, by the way. We have packets you can put in your car. It's a nice little packet. It's got some little extra loose leaf documents in it, and those loose leaf documents they help you fill out forms or do things you need to do if you've been in a crash. You want to make sure if you've been in a crash, one thing you do want to make sure you do is take photos. Something as simple as where the debris fell from the car when there was a crash, because debris will fall from the car and it's going to help identify the location of where the crash occurred. So you want to get that. You want to take photos of that. You want to take photos of the cars and how they've been damaged. If you can take photos of the cars of where they came to rest after the crash, you want to do that. Sometimes the area around the crash where it occurred, you want to try and get those things. That's stuff that is hard to get later on. I'm one of those that I've told you many times, when you see these things where you're supposed to call the minute there's a crash, or you call in the middle of the night. I'm not so sure that's necessary. I do think it's necessary that you preserve evidence, though, and that you make sure you have as much of the evidence as you can. Now, does that mean if you were in a crash a year and a half ago and you're still hurt and you're suffering that you can't pursue your case? Or if you were in a crash a year and a half ago and you spent 6 months laid up, that you can't pursue your case? Of course not. Give us a call. There's a 3-year statute of limitations for a car crash. That means you've got 3 years to work from the day of the car crash. Now, don't come see us the month before the time runs. That's kind of hard. Well, you can come see us then if you've got one that's that way, but it's going to cause some extra concern for everybody trying to get it done. But come see us if you've been in a crash, and don't worry about whether or not you're calling us the same night or within a few hours when the crash happened. That's something you don't need to do. Take your time and let's get you better to begin with. We're going to talk to Sharon today. She's got a property dispute question. Sharon, how you doing?
Fine, thank you.
What can we do for you?
I would like some guidance as to what might be my best path forward. I have a house in Denver that has been in the family for many years, and it's always been my understanding that there was an alley easement at the back, but the alley was never put in, but the city could come in and put one there at some point if they wanted to.
Okay.
Recently, the neighbor behind me decided, who I don't know, hasn't lived there too long, maybe 2 or 3 years, decided that claims that he has a survey that says that the fence was not on the property line, and he was going to move the fence 5 feet onto what I consider to be my property. Without any notice, he came over. Well, he hired a landscaping company and sent their person over to clear cut the back 5 feet of my property. And my tenant called me. I was at a funeral, and I went over, and, you know, here this guy has cut my trees and bushes down. And I did not react well to that, told him to get off my property. And he said it wasn't my property, it was the neighbor's property. And I said, well, if it was the neighbor's property, it was still my trees and bushes, and to get out. And so he apologized and left after all my stuff was cut down, and I contacted the neighbor and told him this wasn't okay, that Colorado had a law of adverse possession, and even if it was 5 feet in the wrong place, it had been there for 60 years that I could remember, and he couldn't take 5 feet of my property. I proceeded to call public service company and check about easements, the city and check about easements, the surveyor and check on the survey. Yeah, and was still researching it when he had a different crew come and put a fence in about a month later. I feel like he's stolen a bunch of my property.
When did this occur?
In the last couple months.
All right. And as he was doing it, you, of course, objected to it, correct?
Yes.
And did he tear down your fence? Did you have a fence at that time?
He tore down the existing fence, which I believe was the previous owner of the house's fence. We had never contributed to a fence. There used to be a little wire fence, and then somebody put a white picket fence in. I think we contributed to that one in about 1960, and then somebody put this regular wooden fence in maybe 15 years ago. He claimed it was a $6,000 cedar fence, and it was wonderful, and it was an asset, and I should be grateful. And I told him I didn't like fences, and that's why I had a lot of vines and trees back there. And, yeah, I'm sure he didn't like my vines and trees, and that's why he wanted to move the property line.
Well sure. But, you know, I'm not so sure he can just do it. And did he give you a copy of this survey or this map that showed that it wasn't your property?
He gave a copy of one document. And I did call the city office, you know, and he said, oh, he'd been intending to come and talk to me about it, but he hadn't gotten it done. Well, the document he had that had a permit stamp on it was stamped a year and a half ago, and the city said, well, that's a permit to put a fence in, but there's no, we don't in any way ascertain the appropriate place to put it.
Right, they don't. All they do is say you can put it. You're supposed to put it on your own property. And how long have you had that, understood that this back 5 feet was your property?
My parents and grandparents bought the property together in 1952.
well, that's long enough. You know, you're there on the adverse possession. There's some other elements that have to be fulfilled, but... to me, it sounds like this neighbor just is kind of a bully and decides that he's going to go in and do what he wants to do, how he wants to do it, and when he wants to do it.
I sure looked on it that way, and I called the neighbors on both sides. You know, it makes a jog in the fence from where it's gone down the middle of the block. We're kind of in the middle, both directions, and all of the other fences line up, and here it's... So I assume that maybe his fence was at the edge of the alley easement, and he's moving it to the middle of the alley easement. But when I called XL, they said there wasn't a power line easement. The city said they didn't have any record of an alley easement, but that you did have to allow right-of-way for utilities. And so consequently, he put and he said they told him that, so he put a gate at both ends. Of it.
Okay.
That doesn't have to be 18 years.
Right. We're talking 18 years, which obviously you meet. There's not a problem there that I can see.
So my thinking is, okay, you know, maybe be a decent neighbor and not make this bully take his fence down, but put a lien on his property so that when he sells the property, the fence has to be moved. Is that a reasonable approach?
Well, I'm not so sure. The bottom line is that you may lose some rights if you don't exercise your right to ownership of that property. You've had the property. You've had it against the right of the true owner, if in fact he's a true owner. I'm not even so sure he is. I'd love to see the survey and see what's going on. You were on that property as an owner. You exercised control over the property. You were in the possession of the property alone. It was exclusive. It was open and notorious and continuous for the period set forth by the statute, which is 18 years. I'm not so sure they have any rights on it. And what I'd like to do is get your number, and we'll give you a call, and we'll talk to you about how to assert your rights and claim back the property that you've had for the last 50 years.
I would love to do that. Again, my thinking was that perhaps I should send him a certified letter stating this is my property, and yes, I've allowed you to build a fence on it, but no, I'm not giving you any property, you know, and send it by certified mail once a year.
Let's have you do it through a lawyer.
Claim that.
Why don't you let our law firm do it for you?
Wonderful.
Okay.
I would be most grateful.
Let me put you on hold, and Kevin will take your number, and we'll take care of that one for you. Okay, Sharon?
Thank you so much. so much.
Okay. Thanks for calling the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Tom and Sam, I know you guys have called. We're going to talk to you right after the break. It's a short break, so hold with us. You can call us right back. We're at 303-713-8255. Tom and Sam, you're up next. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Brad Pollock, Bob Leonard in the studio. We're here today to talk to you about any legal problems you might have. We've got a couple callers on the line, but for a short minute or so, we're going to talk to Eric out of Catlin's. Eric, how's it going, bud?
Good. How are you doing today?
Doing good. You got some specials for us?
We do. We're running new specials this week. We'll start with that breakfast special. We're going to do what we're calling a Nutella French toast. We're going to take thick sliced Texas bread. We're going to griddle that up to a golden brown. We're going to load Nutella right down the middle of that, serve that with some cinnamon and powdered sugar on top. That will be the breakfast special for the next couple of weeks. And our lunch special is going to be a spicy shrimp burrito. We're going to saute up some spicy shrimp, put some bell peppers, some onions in that, lettuce, tomato, guac, and sour on the side. And, of course, you can get our homemade beans and rice on the side with that. That's going to be the lunch special for the next couple of weeks, guys. And as always, we've got the umbrellas open on the patio. I think it's going to be okay today. I don't know about tomorrow with the weather, but we're going to hold out today. Umbrellas are up. Crafts and mimosas are ready to go. Flat screens are on. All kinds of things going on at Caitlin's. And, guys, don't forget, every Monday and Friday from 11 to 2, we are doing the buffet. That is coming back in a couple of weeks. We're working on that. And we're also doing the early bird special Monday through Friday. That runs from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. That's two eggs of your choice, ham, bacon, or sausage, the hash browns, of course, toaster to your pancakes on the side, and those pancakes are buttermilk. I always recommend those. All those are coming on, so be looking forward to those things coming up and all kinds of other scratch-made items on that menu. Come and check us out.
Eric.
Yes?
Burger and a beer for Father's Day. How's that sound?
Absolutely. You know, we do that every year. That's coming right around the corner. Burger of your choice. You can do a blue cheese jalapeno or a green chili bacon cheddar burger and a beer of your choice. We got them all right here, all the domestics and Corona as well. So come on down and check us out for Father's Day. Come and check us out anytime. We'd love to have everybody down.
Okay. I'm going to be bugging you for a special next week for, just for Father's Day. Burger and a beer. You got to give me a little bit of reduction on that, okay?
Absolutely. You know we will.
I appreciate that. I'm going to be out on your deck here a little bit.
Absolutely,
buddy.
Come on down. And don't forget, we are 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, that's one block east of Colorado. That is in the Glendale Shopping Center, guys. Come and check us out. You will love it, everybody of the way.
Finally, how's that construction? You got enough room for us out there?
You know what? We've got the scaffolding down. I'm glad you asked me. We've been waiting. The scaffolding is out of our way. Our new paint job and our new stucco is up. We're waiting on our lights. We're waiting on the rest of it to be finished off. The parking lot has opened up a lot. Thank you so much for bringing that up. It looks great. Come and check out our new look and check out our new menu items.
Okay, we'll see you down there, Eric. Take
care.
Sounds
good, guys. Thanks.
Thank you. You're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We're going to stay right with the phones, take your calls in the order in which they came. Tom, you have a property issue dealing with a missing title?
Correct.
What's going on, buddy?
I basically bought this property long ago, and after it was paid off, I really didn't pay attention. It was my first purchase of property, and I didn't get a copy. I bought it from my uncle, and I thought I had a land contract with it, and after it was paid off, he took the land contract to the assessor's office and had it stamped, but he never provided the title. And he since passed away, and then his wife passed away. And now I'm trying to figure out how I go about getting the title.
It's real property?
Yes, it is.
All right. And so when you get, when you pull the records of the county, does it show it being in your uncle's name?
I've been paying taxes on it, and my name is on the tax records showing that, you know, my name is on there.
How long have you been paying taxes on it?
Since 91.
Okay. And have you, do you know what an ownership and encumbrance report is?
No, I do not.
Okay. Have you talked to a title company about the title to the property?
No, I guess I don't know who owned the title.
Okay.
You mean any title company?
All right. What we're going to do, Tom, for you is we're going to talk to you and we're going to get the necessary information. We're going to run what's called an ownership and encumbrance report, okay? And a title company can do that. And normally they'll do it for very little money and sometimes just for free, just to be able to give us the information. That means the title company will go and they'll do a search to see whose property the title is in. Whose name the title is in. And they'll tell us any encumbrances that are recorded against the property, okay?
Okay.
Once we get that, we'll figure out who has what ownership rights here, according to the county. And that's where you want. The real property records are going to identify who's got that ownership. At that point, if you don't, if your name's not on it, we're going to get all the paperwork you've got, and we're going to have to do what's called a quiet title action, which is going to allow you to be able to put the property in your name. It'll require that you give notice to anybody who might be entitled to title, but we're going to be able to take care of it for you. All right.
Thank you.
It's a little bit of a process, but I think we can do it. Bob, you figure that's the way to go?
And that sounds correct, Brad. I'm not a big property person, but that's what I would do. To quiet the title, and then he can have the title of the property, and he can sell and do whatever he needs with the property once he has the title.
And I don't know if you were listening to our prior caller when we were talking about adverse possession, but when you just told me you've been making the payments, I think, since 1991, you said?
Right.
I think we got some pretty good rights to show that even if we had anybody making a claim, that you've got the priority.
Anybody on the property right now?
No, it's just open property, nothing built on it. And I've talked to, he had four kids. I've talked to two of them already about the property. They couldn't find the title themselves. When he passed away, they couldn't find any of the paperwork that he left. And
you know, a lot of this information is online. Have you checked, have you gone to the clerk and recorder's office or checked online?
No, I haven't.
Well, that's why we're going to get the ownership and encumbrance report done for you. Okay.
All right. So, thank you very much.
So I want you to hold for me. We're going to have Kevin take your number and name and make sure that we can call you this week to get down the road. We're going to have the address of the property, location of the property, and then we can call up and do it. I see you're in Colorado Springs. Is the property located out there too?
It's actually in Michigan.
Oh, well, let's do
it. So it's out of state, but I have the numbers for the assessor's office and everything for that.
Well, we'll just get a title company out there, and we'll get it down the road for you, all right?
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, Tom. Okay, hold for us. Thanks for calling the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. We're going to stay right with the phones. We're going to talk to Sam. Sam, you have a legal question?
Yeah, good morning.
How you doing, bud?
Hey, great. Hope you guys are doing good on there.
We are. What can we do for you?
Kind of a real general question. Having a conversation yesterday, and fortunately it's not myself that's involved here or concerned, but a person was describing not having any ability to find an attorney who would take their case. And so I kind of wondered if in general, is there, I'm not sure how to phrase this, but I'll just try at it, an in-house strategy that a lawyer firm of any size, one-man band or not, that would say, listen, I don't take cases unless I can win them because I need a win-loss record. For my personal history practice, I need 80% or better wins, or to try to express another way, would it be reasonable to expect you to find an attorney that will work on an hourly rate basis, knowing that it could be a weak case for lack of evidence, in this case, a civil case, but a person wants their day in court and is willing to pay for it?
Oh, man, you just opened up a can of worms that would take hours to talk about. Okay, first of all, yes, there are attorneys who take cases that they know they can win. And there are attorneys and there are law firms, and you'll see them a lot of times, and I'm not going to single out, but there are law firms that do a lot of advertising that'll talk about their wins. And sometimes they've gotten cases they've won that they can never even collect the money on, or that they know it's a slam dunk, or they take it to trial because they know it's a slam dunk. And they, or the insurance company says, look, all we have is $50,000 worth of coverage for our negligent party. We'll pay you the 50. And they go, no, we're going to go get a verdict for a couple million dollars. Because then they can advertise, we got a couple million dollars verdict. And yes, there are law firms that do that. There are other law firms, and there are people, and sometimes the same law firms, that look, and if it looks like a bad case, they won't take it to trial just because of that. They're afraid to have a loss on their record. And I'm going to tell you this right now, Sam, if you ever go get an attorney and you ask the attorney, have you ever been in trial? The attorney says yes. If you ask him if he's ever lost a case, if he says no, you probably want to walk away from that attorney. Because, you know, unless you have a slam dunk case too, because attorneys usually, the ones that aren't willing to take the hard cases to trial aren't going to do you very well if yours is a hard case. You've got to have attorneys who are willing to go in and do it. It's like the Broncos. They don't have a perfect season, and it's like the Rockies. They don't have a perfect season. That just happens.
But, Brad, most cases don't go to trial. I mean,
right.
A number of cases do go to trial. But we have to posture the cases if we're going to trial to make sure the insurance company stays truthful and try to get this thing settled.
And that's another question.
If I might jump ahead on that, I suggest, well, what about trying to represent yourself? The thought being that maybe I've heard judges are lenient with someone who doesn't necessarily isn't an ace in the hole and a player and understands all the rules and regs, but you still have to be careful. Even just the confusion of properly submitting a civil action to the court so that they accept it, is that the beginning point? You have to actually get past that first hurdle. The court might reject your request for time in court in front of a judge.
Well, no, the court usually is going to be pretty straightforward in saying that that you have to meet the same standards of any other litigant, whether you have an attorney or not. Now, have I seen judges sometimes give a little bit of leeway to an individual as far as trying to explain it to him or to a pro se litigant as far as here's what you have to do? Yes. And do I think attorneys should be held to a high standard? Yes. But at the same time, I think the judges want to do an even situation. They want to make sure everything is even when they're dealing with people and that both sides are being treated even. We got to take a break. Do you want to hold for a second?
I'll tell you what, I'll call your offices and we'll talk privately.
Give me a call. Be happy to hear from you. All right. You're listening to the Bell and Paul Legal Show. We're going to have Ryan and Steve on next. Ryan, you're next up. Steve, you're after that. Thank you for listening to Bell and Paul Legal Show. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Brad Pollock, Bob Leonard in the studio today. We're here talking to you about any problems you've got. We're going to talk to Ryan and Steve after that. Ryan, you have a problem with a chipped tooth. What's up, man?
Well, good morning, Brad. Good morning, Bob.
Hi.
This is Ryan calling from Larkspur. Yeah, I bought some sweet cherries at King Supers. They were frozen. And let them fall out.
Okay.
But I chipped a tooth on one of the pits. Turned out that actually in the package I got, there were three pits. And on the front of the package, it says pitted in two places. And then there is a caution on the side of the package that, says that the pits are mechanically removed but contain occasional pits. Caution should be observed. I mean, I just wonder if there's any liability on that. I know years ago they used to be liable for that type of thing.
How bad is it chipped? Would you have to get dental work?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah? Yeah. Thousands of dollars, or where are you at on it?
I don't know. I think probably what they would do is the dentist would whack off the top of it and put a crown on it.
Did you talk to King Supers about it?
Yeah, I did. And then they took down the information, and then they had the producer out of Oregon State call me. And, they kind of led me to believe that they're going to take care of it, but then when it turned out, they really didn't.
Did they send you a no-help letter, or did they send you anything at all?
They sent me a self-addressed envelope because they wanted to see the package, even though they had all the information, the barcodes and all that off the package. And then, of course, they wanted to see the three pits, and I did not send it to them.
Did you send pictures of it?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they haven't responded?
Just by sending out the information and a couple of gift cards to Fred Meyer, which is owned by Kroger.
Normally, what happens is companies like this will have some insurance, they'll have some protection for consumer protection, where they'll pay or they'll extend some money to pay for the medical care that you need and maybe something for the inconvenience. It's not a lot. You're not going to get a lot, but they're willing to give you something or talk to you about something and try and do something with you. I'm surprised they haven't had anybody contact you. So I think it warrants a little bit to step up the demand a little bit is what I think we need to do and talk to them. Yes, they gave you a warning. Yes, they said that there may be pits in there. Yes, they say there's a way they're processing or removing them. But, I'd like to see this box, but when you're already talking about three different pits in there, you're talking about something where their processes are causing problems as far as making sure that they're getting done what they're saying they're doing, and that's getting the pits out of the cherries, period.
It's actually worse than that. About a few days later, I got another package out of my freezer, pulled that out, and there were two pits in there. Now, I've never had a problem with the product, never. And this is one right after another.
Yes.
Really strange.
Something's gone wrong in their process. That's
exactly.
It has to be something that's gone wrong. So this is another one where I think what we need to do is we'll talk to you off the air. We'll get the information. We'll step it up a degree by having maybe a call or a letter from our office saying, look, this is something that ought to be resolved pretty easy. What I'd like you to do is check with the dentist and see what it's going to cost to take care of that tooth.
Brad, do you think it's any different than someone that has they get sick when they buy a packaged food and it makes them sick because there's listeria or something in there?
Yeah, I think you're doing down the same line, you know, as far as what's happened in their process is why do we have this problem and why aren't they willing to take care of at least the injury you experienced?
I mean, one pit is about three or four pits in one package.
And then you got a couple more in the next package. I think that's got to be pursued. Okay.
Yeah, I've kept all the packages and stuff, too, you know, with the barcodes and all that.
You hold on to that evidence. Let me get your name and number. We'll call you this week, okay?
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you, Brad.
Thanks for calling us. We'll help you out. You're listening to the Bell and Paul Legal Show. We're going to talk to Steve, a dog barking issue. Steve, what's going on?
Oh, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Well, I called you about a year ago about this. And then went to a mediation, and they suggested they're going to take care of it, and they're going to have a caller and et cetera. But just the last month, the dog barking is very, you know, the weather improved, the windows open. It just can't go on. So I need to get this thing, you know, taken care of. The younger lady moved into her mother's house. The mother paying the fine, I've been told, and they fined her a couple of times in a court or a city or whatever. And it's just the two dogs are wild. They brought in from some farm or somewhere that she used to live, and it's just going on.
Is this going on in Denver?
Yes.
And you've got these dogs barking. They've been the owners have been fined for excessive noise or for the excessive barking, for the nuisance.
Yes.
And they haven't done anything. It's the same dog.
Same two dogs. They wow. They run around, bark. They put a 6-foot fence around a smaller section of the backyard, right from a door. Because they're not trusting the dogs with a 4-foot chain link fence that they have. They're pretty intimidating dog when they jump up to the fence and, you know, you drive by an alley and they bark at you, car and everything. They bark anything that moves.
Well, if they've been fined and that's not stopping and they're not doing anything to stop the dog from barking, I'm surprised they're not telling them they have to get rid of the dogs.
Well, that's what I tried to figure out, why they still have the dogs here. I called the animal control, and that's it. I mean, they don't do much.
You know, there's section 8-46, barking dog nuisance. There's the statute.
Right.
Any dog that's been allowed or permitted to persistently and chronically violate this section as demonstrated by one or more convictions for violating this section. Receipt of subsequent.
How can I made the animal control to do that? I mean,
well, it says the house will be declared a public nuisance. It may be impounded for compliance procedures outlined in the subsection.
I would need. I'd like to get information of what my next step should be. Keep calling the animal control 311 every day, or any other thing I should be able to do.
I'm going to tell you, Steve, and I think. One is, yes, believe it or not, you call them every single time you have the nuisance occurring because that, you know, a lot of times if they're just getting a call, if you're just letting it go by and you're only calling once a month or once every 3 or 4 weeks, then they don't recognize the gravity of the situation. So yes, that's exactly what they're there for. 311 is there for that purpose, and you need to call animal control. But we also need to, and you can and will help you, we need to start finding out why they're not taking the next measures of telling them, look, you're either going to have to get rid of the dogs or, you know, have you seen, have they used the collars on the dogs? Have you seen it actually there to on the dogs to stop the barking?
I personally never seen it. Neighbor, she's right next door. I'm on the other side in the alley. They said that sometime they saw it, but they don't see it anymore.
Well, they took it off, and now they got the dog barking again.
Sure.
That's what they got. So they got to get that collar back on. And
she have a little issue, I think, because she called the dogs my kids.
Well, I'm sure they do, but that doesn't work. You got to do something more.
Hey, look. I mean, this is crazy.
Hey, that's our sign. We got to go. Let us get your number. We'll call you off there and talk more about what you got to do. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. You've been listening to the Bell and Polk Legal Show. Brad Polk and Bob Leonard handling the phones today. We're going to be back next Saturday. If you'd had some things you couldn't get through on or you want to talk, you make sure you talk to us. We're going to help you if we can at all. You can call us next Saturday. In the meantime, you all be safe and have a good holiday. I'm already thinking it's Father's Day. That's next week. You be safe and you have a good one. We'll talk to you later.
The proceeding was a paid advertisement. The opinions, view.